kick ass. Want to make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood. Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is indeed the Kick-Ass Life Show. Happy Thursday, everyone. This is Michael, the producer of the Kick-Ass Life Show. And I wanted to step in today and give you the download on what's going on with David and introduce our guest for the day. So as you know, with over 100 episodes, we've been very proud of our record of being able to basically record from anywhere. We've been in Bali. We've been in Australia. We've been in Belize. We've recorded from airports and cockfights and parked cars all over the world. And we had every intention of David being able to upload these shows and sort of take you on the road with him and maybe up this hill. And for those who don't know, David is climbing Mount Kilimanjaro at the moment. Now, Kilimanjaro is 19,370 feet. And we normally use this wonderful device, the Zoom H4N. It's a little portable digital recorder to record all the shows. And by the way, if you are anywhere in the personal development space or, I mean, have an interest in recording anything, if you go to seminars or go to recordings or, performances, this Zoom H4N is awesome. It is a really cool device, and it's what we use to record the show on. It's very portable, and it's got great microphones, so you can just set it on a table and hit record, and it goes great. In fact, if you're interested, I will throw a link on the show notes page for today to our Amazon account, and you can get yourself a Zoom H4N. And while I'm on the subject, thank you for everybody that has been clicking on the Amazon link on the website and buying whatever they were going to buy anyway. I don't know if you know that, but if you click on the Amazon link on our website, thekickasslife.com, and you make a purchase, we get a little chunk of it, a little cut. And it doesn't cost you any more, but it totally helps the show. And we're not a huge operation, but it definitely helps, trust me. Anyway, so David, we have this little Zoom H4N, and David didn't want to bring his laptop, for obvious reasons, to Kilimanjaro. So we set him up with some new technology, and we're having a little bit of a problem getting the new technology to work. So he's been recording, so we will be definitely taking you on the hill with us. You just won't hear it in real time. So for the next week or so, what I'm doing is bringing on some really, really cool guests to host some of our other shows, like our half-hour show. And we've got a really cool special guest coming up for this Saturday's 600-second or 10-minute Kicky in the Butt show. And so, yeah, basically just trying to keep it going. But one of the things we did before David left is we recorded a bunch of awesome people. I mean, we had probably 10 or 12 interviews in the can. And this next lady that David is going to interview, and you're going to hear in a moment, is phenomenal. She is absolutely part of this new breed of life coach that's not as politically correct anymore. It's not something that, you know, we used to really kind of beat around the bushes, and she's not like that at all. She's right in your face, and she reminds me a bit. We've had a couple this year, actually, or in the last year, our friend Beth Hanischewski, who is also a wonderful life coach and has that same kind of vibe, like, hey, we're gonna do this thing the real way. And then, of course, our guest is a great friend of Andrea Owens, who still remains to this day the only person I've ever had to bleep from the show, but also is totally in your face and part of this breed of, hey, look, you know, at some point you're going to have to take responsibility and do this thing. So we are really excited to interview this person, and she is wonderful. And I think there's nugget after nugget. And I think if anybody really wants to feel empowered and get to that next level, this is going to be a great show for you. So without further ado, I'm going to do my best David Wood impression. Let's see. What does he usually say every day? So please sit down and we're going to have a little chat with Amy E. Smith.
Well, here I go again. I can't help myself. It's like you think I would come up with a new start to a program, like something, you know, I'd read a book or I'd go and find a quote and I'd start it with this real deep philosophical kind of start. But I can't. I have to say the same thing every single show. How excited am I? And today I'm supremely excited because I get to play with someone who is a bit of a badass. this is someone who, you know, like me, has a deep thirst for authenticity. And I'm so excited to have her on the show. She's a really, really close friend of one of our past show stars, Andrea Owen. And I want to say hi and welcome to Amy. Amy, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
Hello. So badass, hey? So you're a bit of a badass.
So, I'll answer to that.
Yeah. Can I share a little bit about what you're wearing?
Yes. And as we talked, I already had to get rid of a layer because I got too hot.
I'm turning the video back on.
Oh, no.
I just called, and of course, you know, we do this audio program, and I always like to be on Skype if I'm not in the same room with someone so that we can connect eye to eye before the show and have that deeper connection. And Amy's in her pajamas, and they are really cool pajamas, Amy. Thank you for sharing.
I wish I could say that was not common. But it's actually extremely common.
Well, you know, I get it. You know, when you're living a kick-ass life, you know, when you're not out and about doing stuff, quite often the phone rings, you're in it, you're a life coach, and like you say, you know, it's why not be comfortable? I mean, it's just one of those things. But, you know, what I'm fascinated by you about, Amy, I mean, you were a makeup artist for a lot of years. Dying that slow death, I think I heard you. I heard it said, but mm-hmm. you know, and then you kind of have this kind of awakening, this moment of kind of understanding, and then this kind of journey to this authentic sort of badass, kick-ass kind of life. Why don't you take me back to that sort of what were you feeling before you kind of woke up and said, "Hey, I know what I'm doing. I know what my life purpose is. I'm going for it."
Oh, it's such a wonderful story to look back at in retrospect because it really has become quite the testimony for where I'm at now. And so as you mentioned, I worked for a good decade as a makeup artist. And for a good amount of those years, I worked for a prestige makeup line, cosmetic line, and was a corporate trainer for them. And so I traveled quite a bit. And I kind of always used the moniker, I had a big girl job. You know, everything, you know, there's the company car and the assistant and everything looked really phenomenal on paper. But, you know, when I stood back and looked at the quality of my life, my relationships weren't stronger. My health wasn't better. I wasn't cultivating friendships or relationships with my family or my husband. And I remember very distinctly, I had somewhat of a quarter-life crisis, and this was, gosh, this is probably a good 8 years ago or so. I remember it very distinctly, and I was driving in that damn company car, and I always was on voicemail and business calls and all sorts of stuff while I was driving. And this particular time when I was driving, I was listening to music. I was listening to Kelly Clarkson's Breakaway, and all of a sudden, it dawned on me that it had been ages since I had actually listened to music. And you should have seen me. I mean, it was fit for a Lifetime movie. I'm bawling and I'm singing at the top of my lungs, "Break out!" So, yeah, I'm no American for damn sure. I come home and I've got false lashes falling off my face and mascara streaming down. And I'm just like, you know, just that horrible cry when you can't quite even get your wits about you. And I walk in and my husband looks at me and he's like, "Oh my God, babe, what's wrong?" And I look at him and I hold up my fingers like I'm, you know, showing him how close I am to losing myself. And I said, "Babe, I am this close to completely losing who I am." And that was the moment when I realized, if I don't have this job, I have nothing. And I mean, obviously that was being dramatic, but what I meant by that was I haven't spent any time cultivating these other areas of my identity that truly deserve to be cultivated for my own fulfillment. And that really created a massive shift. That began the discovery process of what's the next chapter? Because I had a good gig, I really did. And I knew that if I jumped ship, I wanted it to be for the next monumental chapter in my life. And they say for many of us, in my generation that we have kind of the average of 5 to 6 full-blown careers in our lifetime. So I thought, sweet, I've got one down. Let's make sure the next one is going to be really rich. And I use that a lot now in teaching people how to figure out what they want. And it took me quite a while, and it was really interesting. My husband came home one day, and I was still doing the same job, knowing that the shift needed to happen, but not what it looked like. And he said, I heard about this job, this occupation on the radio. There was this life coach on the radio. And he goes, babe, that's what you are. You do that already. And he had actually sent away for some materials to a coaching institution at the time. And that really began my journey. And it was quite tumultuous. It was a good 3 or 4 years before it became, a sole practice. But that was really kind of the catalyst that brought me to this work.
You know, you obviously have worked with a lot of people, and I love your energy. I like your style. I like how it's that authenticity piece again. It's like, no apology. Yeah, when you look out there and you see, I mean, this show is hitting 154 countries, and, mm-hmm. and you go past people every day. You're approached by people. The people come on your site. How many people are this close from losing themselves, losing their identity?
I would say that so many of the people I come into contact with have already hit that precipice, where they've had that oh shit moment where they've gone, I can't maintain this anymore. If I look at the trajectory of where my life is going and what it looks like in 5 years, if I don't change, I can't function like this anymore. And so I do get a lot of people who are at that place where it hurts too much, and it so much so that change is inevitable. So it's great because I get so many people who have that hunger, and where that hunger is present, change is following. It's all about mental determination. It really is.
So you're and I agree. I mean, you see that, but and this hunt for the authentic self. Yeah. Had you found during your makeup years, and I know, some of your highlights, I think you put makeup on Ryan Seacrest and things like that. This is big stuff, though. I mean, if that's your career and you're working at that kind of level, that's a big accomplishment. And it's something that, is a feather in the cap. But do you find then the authentic path? What's steering us away, do you think? Why do you think so many people are living under layers and layers and layers, or masks and masks and masks, and have one person for this this scene, one person for that scene? Why isn't authenticity kind of everyone's way of living? What do you think is going on?
I think it truly is the facade of what will garner whatever it is that we're looking for, whatever we're hungry for. So for many people, it is what they think success looks like, what they think love looks like, what they think being accepted looks like. And then through any number of factors, whether it's your upbringing, whether it's pivotal moments, they start creating these beliefs about who they are. And then they continue to gather evidence to support that belief. And it was really interesting. I was reading your bio, David, and I was very struck by the teacher of yours who told you that you would never amount to anything. And those are usually those moments in your life that create some sort of initial thought that eventually becomes a belief. And it's so clear that you've surmounted that. But I think for so many people, they attach to that and that becomes their truth. And then around every corner, they look for evidence to support that. So if they have a a divorce, or they have rough relationships, or they don't get a job that they want, or they can't lose weight, they go, see, that belief is true. And then they continue to look for solutions outside of themselves. And that is that slippery slope where they go, okay, as long as I can find, you know, the perfect career path, as long as somebody will love me, as soon as I can have a baby, I mean, fill in the blanks. And sometimes it's not even that harsh. Sometimes it's even, well, as soon as the kids are grown up or out of the house, then I'll start living my life. Then I'll start finding the answer. So what we have are people who evade the present moment and don't think that they can love who they are or enjoy their life now, like it's contingent on something else. And so a lot of the work that I do is around that, around it's not contingent on anything else. You get to love who you are now. You get to be fierce and authentic now. It's not, you know, even for myself, if I didn't have this career, I'm still worthy. I'm still amazing. If I'm not impacting anybody, who the fuck cares? I still am worthy. So that's the message that I really try to convey is we're always going to have goals. We're always going to be a work in progress, but that does not have to equate our self-worth.
Sure. So when you started out, you know, you obviously went to this life coaching. I know you and Andrea met there, and you have similar styles, even though that they weren't born in the same, I mean, they weren't born together. In other words, you've grown a style because I think you were drawn together as personalities, and within your personalities, you have a similar style. And that's why I'm attracted to both of you, is that there's that similar style, that similar intolerance for victimhood, that intolerance for, you know, for our own surrender to what other people think is normal or and acceptable. I mean, I think, you know, that's where that sort of kick-ass, badass kind of attitude comes from. But for you, you know, when you started to sort of not want to be this other person and really step into who you really are, what was some of the walls and what was some of the struggles you had personally in the beginning? I mean, and how easy was it to slip backwards as opposed to moving into that fierce, authentic self? And I love that word, fierce, authentic, because that's truly, you know, that's, I mean, authenticity is there. There's a ferocity in authenticity. Yes. You have to be on that edge, because without that fierceness, it's so easy to not be who you are and be who other people want you to be, right?
Right.
So what were some of the struggles you went through initially as you found your fierce authenticity?
Well, it's so funny that you say that, because I do feel really grateful to have grown up in a family that didn't make me wrong for being as extroverted as I was. I mean, I definitely had a lot of limitations as far as growing up in a very conservative, born again household. So there was a lot of notions about what right and wrong was. And, you know, I won't get into that, but I do remember, being really young, and the guy that I was dating at the time, I was probably 16 or 17. So this gives you an idea of how I've always kind of operated. And, he was black, he was African American, and I'm not, I'm white, if you can't tell by my Valley Girl accent. And those of you who are listening, and I remember his mom having a conversation with me about being an interracial couple. And she kind of said, you know, it's fine with me if you guys are dating and it's just not serious, whatever. But if he were ever to be interested in marrying a white girl, I would have a severe problem with that. And in my 16 years, I look at her and I said, you know what? There's a point in your life when you have to stop living for everybody else and for everybody else's expectations and really truly living on your own terms. And I think she was kind of like, oh, okay, this little girl. But I was always into power like that. And then there were numerous amounts of things after that that put that to the test. So my journey has not been easy in any scope of the imagination. But one of the big things now that I do this work, one of the challenging obstacles that I've gotten through is standing behind that authenticity when people don't like my profanity. So at the beginning, there was a little bit of that barrier to get through of trying to please everybody.
Mm.
And I'm thankful to say that that was quite short lived. I still get it sometimes where people will say, you know, this is so inappropriate, and they'll make judgments about, you know, if somebody in self-help should be that way. And the thing that I attach to that has become incredibly encouraging is the more authentic I am and the more I lean into that, the more I attract my tribe. You know, I like to call them my soul tribe, the people who resonate with that, who don't want petals and, you know, or, pebbles and brooks and waterfalls and shit like that. They want somebody real who is still a badass, but cares about, you know, nurturing your life and becoming better. So,
well, I think your point there, which I really subscribe to, is that there are people who when you talk about brooks and streams and that, I mean, there are leaders who attract them to their tribe and they can have the same success. And there are people who are edgy and who want that roar, kind of get the crap out of the way, stop bullshitting me type of attitude. And they want, and they're attracted to your tribe and people like you, like Andrea. And so you're not saying that one is better than the other. What you're saying is that you're attracting a tribe of people, and within the people that you attract, there's this deep level of authenticity, and the people that struggle with it, there are other places they can go for their own journey, and that journey can be as rich and as fulfilling and as rewarding and as opening. Is that what I just heard?
Absolutely. And so I'll tell you, you know, my husband is adorable, and he's my biggest fan. So he'll always say, oh, go check out my wife, go check out my wife. And he'll have some clients who are like, oh, she's a little in your face. She's a little too much for me. She's a little, ugh. And I always think, gosh, good. That means I am enough of who, I'm taking a strong enough stand that there's going to be people who love it and there's going to be people who hate it. And so if I get people who make comments, again, I don't tell them like, ah, oh, fuck off, and this is who I am, and I don't get, you know, angry about it. I wish them well on their journey. And I always say, listen, I'm in the business of being my authentic self. My authentic self happens to be a sailor.
I chew tobacco and watch your eye.
So, and I always say, I understand that I am absolutely not the coach for everybody. And I encourage you to find whoever resonates with your spirit. And I always wish them well on their journey, very kindly and humbly. And that's another thing is, I think there's a way to take a very fierce stand for who you are and not apologize for who you are and still handle yourself with grace and kindness.
I think it's interesting, you know, you talk about Tony Robbins just came to mind there, because Tony is someone who I've been on stage with Tony, and, you know, mm-hmm. who in the public arena, you don't hear any profanity, yet on stage, it's absolutely embedded in a lot of what he says is intolerance, it comes out and, you know, it's very, very rich. But of course, by the time you get to that room, you're already part of the tribe, and you realize that that word or that expression or whatever it is that's standing in your way has nothing to do with the real message. It's just an expression of energy. And I think that you know, I've always struggled with that, because I have a bit of a potty mouth, and you know, it's challenging for me, especially when I was on stage. I remember the first time I was doing a Millionaire Mind Intensive in New Jersey or New York. I think it was in New York, downtown New York. And I dropped the F-bomb on stage in front of like 2,500 people. And there was a standing ovation for about 2 minutes, because I'm in New York. So suddenly I get this deep sense of, oh, wow, this is so, you know, and of course I'm still learning about who I want to be and when I grow up type of thing. But it really is interesting when we start thinking of that as energy and not words, and the energy behind being a badass and leading a kick-ass life and not apologizing. It's an energy of this ferocity which I feel in you, and it's the expression that you use or you choose to express that moving forward. And quite often what I found is the people people that are in the heaviest judgment of me and my style and you and your style are people that are locked in pretty heavily. In other words, the box they live in, and again, this is no judgment because I think that everyone's on their journey, but quite often it's when that box of their own expands where they can be in that energy. They can be around energy that's not that necessarily they agree with it, but it doesn't impact or affect them, and it doesn't necessarily have to change the way they show up in the world. And sure. So do you find that? Do you find that you can cross over and you have people of all faiths, all walks, and come into your world and they survive well in there without adopting necessarily the same language, but they get that same energy, that ferocity that they can step out now, still showing up the way they do in their spirituality or their faith, and not giving up or compromising their language, but having a new ferocity. Is that something you're witnessing?
Yeah, you know, what that brings to mind is I, a few years ago, I was hired by a lovely, lovely Mormon girl. And it was very interesting because I kind of prefaced it. I mean, that was at the time when I actually said, hey, I don't watch my language. Hope that's fine with you. Now I don't even give it that much merit, really. She said, I was attracted to you because you didn't apologize for who you are. I'm not that way. I'm not gonna, you know, say, you know, use profanity or things like that. But I want to not apologize for who I am. I want to stand that fiercely behind my choices that I don't ever feel like I need a disclaimer or I need to say I'm sorry or, you know, make things right in any way. So yeah, I definitely have seen that. One of the things that I profess a lot and offer to people in these situations where we are different than others, and this is something that I really use in my everyday life as much as I can, and it's the concept of standing in judgment versus self-care. So our instinct, I think, is we notice when somebody is different than us. And then the second thought is if you heighten the awareness around this and go, okay, so instead of me being so concerned about who they are and expending my energy voting on them and deciding why they're right or they're wrong, what would it look like just to take care of me? So I've had that before where, you know, I've had, you know, years ago I had coworkers who I absolutely could not stand and I felt like they couldn't be more opposite than who I am. And my instinct was to notice it and then to judge. And I realized that spiral of focused on why are you the way you are? How can you think that's acceptable? Why? Well, you never get that answer. So I consciously choose let go of the judgment that never serves me, allow them to be who they are. And then what do I need to do to take care of Amy? And for a lot of those instances, it would be to remove myself from social circles where I'd be around that person, to engage in colluding or talking about them. So it becomes one of caretaking for self versus let me tell you why you're so wrong.
I love that. You know, I think one of the big things that your work is around, again, this is my sense, because again, we're just starting our relationship. So I'm not going to profess to understand everything you're doing, but my sense is that the idea of self-love,
yes,
which I think is the, you know, every student I've ever worked with, which is now hundreds of thousands of students, you know, the self-love button is somewhere, you know, that in the end comes to mind. You know, it's something that I think we all yearn for.
Sure.
How do you stay? I know you do a lot of work in relationships. I know that your range is quite broad, but I mean, I think the specialty in relationships, but let's go to the relationship of self quickly and just talk to me about self-love. What have you learned, uncovered? How do you help people in that journey of self-love, knowing that all other relationships will be a reflection of how much we love ourselves in the end?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you're aware too, it's a hot button topic right now in the self-help community. And I think it's also fed this notion that we don't have it. I don't have enough. I don't love myself. And so it further perpetuates this, I haven't arrived yet, or I'm not good enough, or come from of lack. And so I this is a lot of the work that I do with Andrea. You know, we have a joint business together where we focus solely on loving of self and falling into love. And so, gosh, I could do 40 podcasts just on that. But one of the things that I would say, just kind of a practical piece, if it's somebody who's listening, thinking, I know that I have a desire to have a richer relationship with myself, and I have no idea how to even start. My first piece of advice would be, do something, anything that makes you proud of you. Actual pride in self, doing anything that you're proud of, is one of the fastest vehicles to self-love. So, I mean, we can all relate. Like, if we actually get off our ass and go to the gym or do something like that, you have this sense of like, yeah, I did it, you know? And that is an esteem builder. So if you want something just basic, practical, do something. If it would make you so proud of yourself to approach somebody and at least give them your phone number or submit a job application that you're terrified to submit. Call up a potential client that you're so afraid is going to put you down. Do something that will garner pride in yourself. That's one of the fastest ways to start cultivating it. And then it's a progressive journey, you know, it ebbs and flows.
Well, there's something you said. I want to take you back a little moment there, because I think that what you alluded to was that, you know, in the area of personal growth, that so many people are struggling in this area because they feel there's a lack of. But in essence, what I got sort of hidden under your words there was that, hey, listen, there's enough right now. And each one of us, there's some simple strategies to expand it. But did I pick up right that your sense is that it's not that we don't have enough. It's just that, you know, we're always clamoring for so much more, or we're judging ourselves and comparing ourselves to other people, which means that we'll never have enough. Is that kind of what I heard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we get so spun out in that. And one of the things that I try to offer to people is to untangle this collapse of the desires and the goals and the things that we want to accomplish in our life. And the big equal sign right there that equals self-worth or self-love. So if we could disentangle these a little bit and have them stand on their own. So for instance, I have certain fitness goals that I want to accomplish this year. I have certain business goals, relationship goals, things that aren't present in my life now that I desire, that I'm going after. However, that does not have to mean that I don't get to love me now. And I, you know, it's the whole contingency thing. So if you can look at that and go, you know what, I would love to find an intimate partnership. I would love to have a child. I would love to own my own home. I would love to start a business. Great. Put that in your goals category. Don't put that in your self-worth category. Mm. That way you get to, it's like permission to love yourself along the way, no matter where you are. As far as goal setting or things that you want to achieve, it's like, no, I'm deserving of loving who I am, accepting who I am now.
How do you, I'm just feeling these questions. Obviously, I haven't prepared anything with you, and I don't with anyone, but you know, this sort of image, I was in the bookstore yesterday in Chapters, and I'm looking at these magazines, and I mean, there were girls on these magazines who were like, you know, they look like they're 13 and they're in bikinis, and mm-hmm. and I was really sort of thinking about, you know, the projection of the media on self-worth, especially when it comes to a woman's body and how she's enough. And what do you think, you know, I mean, is this bombardment of images of what, you know, what is acceptable, what is beautiful, what is, I mean, is that where a lot of this self-doubt comes in, or is it deeper than that? Is it going back into the sort of the how our parents and grandparents feel? Is it genetic? What do you feel?
Well, I definitely tend to have quite the Freudian thought on that, and that I do really feel like we're shaped from childhood. And I do think that we can take media and blame and say, well, if it wasn't for all of these, you know, depictions of women, then I most certainly would love myself. But then here we are again, looking at things outside of ourselves. Mm. So we could, you know, and I do a ton of belief work. That's one of the things that I so advocate. And it's what I was talking about with that circumstance that may have happened to you with that teacher. There, for many of us, there's a pivotal moment. There's something that happened, whether it's an egregious relationship, something that was verbally said to us, an environment that we were involved in that perpetuated a belief about self-love, you know, and then throughout our rest of our life, we, you know, like I said, we gather evidence to support it. But here's the deal. Nobody is making you subscribe to online magazines. Nobody is making you get the Victoria's Secret magazine come to you. Nobody is making you put those things into your Netflix or into your DVR queue. There's so much that is actually in our power. You know, you look at these people who are celebrities, for instance, and there's certain people who are in every tabloid, right? And then there's plenty of people who are completely off the grid. If you want to not be inundated, you don't have to be. Mm.
So I was just saying about this Matthew Connor, how, you know, he just didn't care. He was out there in his, you know, in his swimsuit every day and no one bothered him. So I totally subscribe to that, that thing. I love this thing on choice, though. Your thoughts around, you know, we're choosing to put these things in front of us. And I know that victimhood is something that anyone who's edgy like you and I, edgy like Andrea, you know, this, it's so easy for us to talk about this victimhood. You know, blame, justify, complain, you know, and I've heard you use the word blame a couple of times now. Why is it? Why do we fall into this victimhood? Why do people fall into this victimhood?
Man, it can be, again, it can be so many different things. Before I jump into that, I do want to just make mention too. I'm not trying to make light of what's happening in the media or that we shouldn't be advocates for more realistic depictions of beauty, et cetera, et cetera. And are there some really egregious things happening with beauty being 13-year-old girls and things like that? You know, yes, there's some deplorable things happening, but again, it's about our conscious choice of what we focus on. So I just wanted to kind of throw that in.
No, I'm glad you did. I know that we just got interrupted. Our call got interrupted. So I'm glad you brought that back in. So, but do you understand what I'm saying with if we go back to this whole victimhood thing where people, yes, you know, this, you know, choosing to blame, justify, complain, and live in that world. I mean, we see it so much.
Yes.
Why is it just easier, do you think? Is it easier for people to do it? I mean, is it, because it really is. It's not attractive at all. And yet so many people fall into the trap. And it's only sometimes when they get that fierce sense of self that they can step out of it. And that's all about responsibility, right?
Sure. Well, I would say probably the easy answer to that is that if you tend to fall into victimhood, you are normal. Congratulations. And I mean, we could dissect where it comes from. I think for some reason, and again, I don't even know if it matters, we tend to think that life happens to us. And it's not really until we are, we hear a message, perhaps, we have a mentor, we read a certain book, where it becomes this realization, kind of this aha moment that, oh, wait a minute, I actually have power here. I actually have choice. I don't have to be a victim. I can actually be a survivor. And I'll tell you, I had a situation in 07, my father passed away, and in front of me. And I had the great fortune that I had already kind of delved into self-help, and it kind of explored some of these concepts around being a victim to life happening to you versus you choosing what you want to do with this life. And I remember very distinctly running the gamut of human emotions and feeling so much sorrow and heaviness and thinking, I'm at choice right now. I can go into the why and ask forever, why did this happen to me? Why him? Is there a God? Why would you do this, God? And spin and spin and spin. Or I can ask something more empowering and say, what's my learning here? What was I meant to experience this for? And I'll tell you, that stance, me taking that stance and saying, I choose learning instead of victimhood. I choose survivor instead of victimhood. Does it mean I wasn't in pain? Hell no. Oh my gosh, it was one of the most egregious things I've ever gone through. But it meant that I was not going to be destroyed. And I have a favorite quote that I use all the time, and it is, do not be defined by what happens to you in this life. Be defined by how you deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
It's a victimhood where we go, I am defined by what's being done to me. And there's a lack of ownership. But I think the change happens with, it's very simple. It's just awareness.
So the first step to change is awareness. But with if we delve into this a little bit more, we've got people listening all over the world, 154 countries, and so lots of different cultures, and in some of these countries, again, if I give you the country list, I mean, some of these countries where women are treated like third or fourth class citizens in some cases, you know. Mm. But, you know, what are some other strategies as people sort of start stepping in across that threshold? And I know that I'm going to share where they can come and do some work with you. I know you have lots of great free stuff that will help people step into this as well. But give me some of your big aha, some of your big learnings, and especially when people are starting out, when they start hearing this message for the first time, or, you know, and they want to step into more of this, what's some of the other things that they can be focused on, or some of the daily actions they can be taking? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, a lot, like I mentioned before, a lot of the stuff that I do has to do with thought work and belief work and really the conversation that we're having in our own mind. So one of the things that I think is really imperative is to start looking at how are you speaking to yourself? What is going on in your own internal dialogue? And so something that I offer to a lot of people, because that's really where we need to start, right? You know, I think it's been really clear. It's like, it's not in the job. It's not in all these other things externally. It really is about how you choose to approach life, right? So and sometimes I think we go, okay, so I listen to how I speak to myself. What exactly does that look like? What does that mean? So what I like to tell people is look for specific phrases. Look for things like, if you're going through your day and you repeat things that start with, I'm so fill in the blank, or I'm a fill in the blank, or I always fill in the blank. Those are phrases of your self-talk that's nurturing your reality. So for instance, and this is something that I also learned from Tony, and again, has to do with the energy of words that we use. So if you're saying something like, I'm so stupid, I'm so stupid, I'm so stupid, it perpetuates that energetic feeling. Like, you never don't feel stupid. It never feels better. You never move out of that. So what if you could use a word that has less energetic intensity, like silly, or like, obviously for many people, if they're working towards speaking differently to themselves, you can't really buy into saying like, I am a genius. You're it's not going to work for you. But what would be something that maybe didn't have such an intense emotional energy? And I mean, I even do this. I'll notice myself if I'm under the weather, I'll say, oh, I feel like shit. God, I feel so sick. Oh, I feel so sick. That keeps me, it arrests you in that current emotional frequency. So now I'll say things like, I'm not at my best, but I will be, or I am on the road to recovery. So that's one thing that I would offer is, first of all, look for that specific phrase, I'm a, notice what you're saying to yourself. Does it carry a negative emotional impact? And is there a less intense word that you could substitute? Even, instead of saying, I'm so overwhelmed, I'll say, I'm just really in high demand.
And you certainly are.
And that, but even how we just did that, to see that energy, it broke up whatever energy was feeling and made me laugh. And, you know, so those are very small, simple, implementable things that you can do today.
And the crazy thing is, I mean, you know, personal growth, it's not that complicated, is it? I mean, really, at the end of the day, if somebody wants to grow past where they're at, because it is a journey. I mean, no one's going to start something today and 7 days from now, you know, I mean, their whole world can change because of the way they see it and how they treat themselves. But in the end, it's still a journey. I mean, for you, Amy, I mean, there's still stuff you're dealing with every single day. I mean, it's not like you have, I don't think perfection is what you're going for, right?
Oh my goodness. You never arrive. And it, you know, my dad used to always tell me, the minute you get too big for your britches is the day you stop learning. And I always thought, my gosh, what a sad place to be where you're not growing anymore. And you really never arrive. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it, is continuing to grow, continuing to learn. The thrill of aha moments, the thrill of the phoenix rising, like, what a gift. So, I mean, even for my own self, I'll be really candid and honest. The last 3 months, I've been in somewhat of a mild depression, you know? And I always joke about it with, you know, Andrea, and I'll say, I'm the joy fucking junkie. I don't get to be down. I don't get to be depressed. And the deal is I'm human too. I still have lessons to learn. I have most certainly not arrived. I still fall prey to my self-talk. But the piece, like we spoke about earlier, is it's the awareness. It's the picking yourself up. It's going, you know what? I'm done choosing this. I'm going to choose something else.
Mm.
And that really has been, you know, I've made this great shift within the last couple of weeks even. And it's, you know, it ebbs and flows. So that's another thing that I would really offer, is give yourself generous room, to grow and play, and permission to be down sometimes, man. And sink into it. You know, in the coaching training that I went through, we always called it down the tube, you know, up, you know, the euphoria down the tube is just this downtrodden, horrible. And I really think sometimes we need to sit in the trenches like that and feel what it feels like in order to relish, you know, again, the phoenix rising.
Yeah, I talk about that a lot. You know, you have a crappy moment, have a crappy day if you want, but don't, it doesn't have to be a crappy year, right? It just can be, but feel it, you know, when stuff's going on, feel it fully. I love expressing my anger or my, you know, I had to teach my girlfriend how to fight, because I like a good fight, you know, but we don't hold on to it. Like with my kids, the same thing, you know, I'll have a fight with my kids, but it's over. And everyone always says, I can't believe you just guys had a fight. And it's like, there's no energy in the house. There's no, like, no one's wandering around. It's like, it's over. But we say what we feel. But that took me a long time to learn that, yeah, I could get it out without it meaning anything about the other person. It was just my expression of, you know, wall kicking moment type of thing. You know, we obviously we're going to have you back on the show. But the I want to ask you just a couple of tips. I know relationships is your big thing, and we don't have long left. I want to give us a couple of juicy, kick-ass tips on relationships. What's a couple of biggies that someone can take away and say, you know, I was listening to Amy the other day. There was this one thing she said that I'm applying to my relationship that really has made a difference. Is there any of those little gems you could leave with us?
Oh, yes. My absolute favorite thing. Because people ask me, you know, how the hell do you have a happy marriage? You've been with your husband for 15 years. And, you know, I always think it's twofold. One, that you marry the right person to begin with. But I really believe that sure as hell does not get you to, you know, your 25, 50 year anniversary. What I feel very strongly that does is the second component, which is maintenance. And it's the same way we've got, you know, you might have this blossoming, amazing, gorgeous relationship like a plant. And it doesn't matter how beautiful or unique this plant is, like rare and gorgeous. If you don't water it, it's going to die. So it's all about that routine maintenance. So, for instance, if you ever get to that point where that plant is so dead and you have to try to revive it, it's so hard. So that's why if you just you give it the soil, you give it the water, you give it the da-da-da-da. Then you don't have to deal with almost too little too late. So what I offer for people is, you know, I'm always talking about ways to maintain your relationship. And I highly suggest doing, you know, I talk a lot about daily, weekly, and then, you know, monthly or yearly, but I'll offer some of the daily things I think really are the most monumental. So what does that look like? Creating shared meaning. So you know how when you, if you and your girlfriend have a song, you know, it's your song, and you hear it on the radio or whatnot, and you get this like, oh, babe, oh, it's a, that's our song, you know.
Your body's a wonderland.
Yeah.
I'm just letting you know which one it was. I just thought I'd give it to you right there.
Oh, my gosh. My husband this morning was singing Joy Junkie, Funky Monkey, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, please don't sing that.
So for those of you listening, by the way, Joy Junkie is her handle. Just so you know that Amy's handle is Joy Junkie, just so we didn't mention that yet, but carry on.
Yes, I'm sorry. So one of the things that I always encourage is very small shared meanings that you can have throughout the day. So one of the things, I'll just give you a couple of examples. One of the things that my husband and I do that we've created as a sacred ritual is every time he leaves the house in the morning, we have a little phrase because he's 6'5" and I am not. And so I will stand on the taller step and he'll stand on the bottom step. And we always say, get to the step, get to the step, get to the step. And we take like 15 seconds maybe to have a really solid embrace, get really connected energetically, wish each other well. And it is habitual. We never don't do it. And again, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, Amy, that's not that big of a deal. Really? It's not the week that you need to get away and go in to Cabo. That is not going to save your marriage or save your relationship. It's maintaining it every damn day.
Well, you know, you're saying that, you know, one of my favorite couples live in Chilliwack. And, you know, one of the things they did, I spent a summer with them. And every morning they would get up before the kids got up. They have two little girls. And they would get up and they would drink a cup of coffee together and they would talk. And I noticed this behavior and I asked them about it. And they said, you know what? That was our agreement, was that we would make time for each other before anything else happened. And we won't leave the house until we've had our chat, our conversation. And they would just sit on the couch like best buddies and have a cup of coffee. And it was a ritual that was so, and I've always thought of that because I watched them, how they talk to each other, but it's almost set the day up. And I can see you on that step, you know, him never getting in the car without that moment of that connection, that intimacy. And because that's really what it is, right? It's another level of intimacy because you've made space for it. And that's the ritual on the step, 6'5" and you're not. So I want people to understand, you know, they may sound small, but if you're not doing it, then maybe finding those small things is really important.
Well, I always say, don't tell me that your relationship is so important to you and that you don't have 15 fucking minutes to say or seconds to say goodbye to somebody. You know, like you need to pick one. Either this relationship matters to you or it doesn't. One other little small tip that I find really, really is helpful for people, especially if you've got children, it's so easy to get into where you function like business partners. And you handle everything operationally. Like, did you pick up this? And can you grab milk? And did you get the dry cleaning? And so-and-so has to be at soccer practice by 5. And you let go of niceties. You let go of actually speaking to somebody like they're somebody you love. So I always ask my clients, if somebody were to observe you, would they have any idea that the two of you are in love? Do you speak to one another like you are in love? And one of the ways that you can start implementing this is very simple. My husband and I have this rule that in all of our communication mobily, like if we text one another or if we send voicemails, that we are not allowed to talk business or operations until we've said something kind first. So it's got to be, hey, babe, I hope you're having an amazing day, or I'm thinking about you. is the checkbook balanced? Or is it cool if I write that check? Or is it, would you mind swinging by and getting bunny food? Because we've got bunnies. So, you know, it's actually being kind to one another. Again, it's the words that you use that have energy and impact.
Well, you know, that what's great about that is, and I notice this because I interact with a lot of corporate guys, and I invariably, when I start, we'll start talking on the phone or by text, and immediately it's business. And immediately I switch to say, hey, by the way, how's the kids? And you see their whole personality go, oh, they're great, thanks. And for a moment, there's this kind of deeper sense of purpose and connection and intimacy, again, between two guys, between anyone. But it's that I typically always bring it back into people's families and ask them a question about their wife. And I always end an email. If I'm talking to someone, I know their wife's name, their husband's name, their kids' names. I'll always say, hey, love to Sue, by the way. And I just end that, even if it's a corporate email, I'll send it, yeah, I love to your wife, just even if I don't know the name. And I think, you know, there's such a big sense of connection that's missing in our very, very fast-paced world. So I really love this, Amy. I think it's a gem of a tip. And it's so easy to implement. And what can happen is, even if the agreement's not there, one of you could start doing it without the other one knowing and watch the impact on that, right? Because it will, it's almost contagious. Don't you think it's contagious?
It absolutely is. It's, I did a blog post on this about, and I called it the most common relationship poison, and it's tit for tat. Well, if you don't initiate sex, then I'm not going to. Well, if you don't ask me out, then I'm not going to try to spark romance. Well, if you don't help out with the kids, then I'm not going to. And it's the digging in the heels and the entitlement instead of, watch what might shift if you actually give a little. If you just give a little. I remember hearing Brendon Burchard talk about give and you shall receive instead of ask. Like, watch if you actually come from a different space of generosity. And I don't mean, so did you notice I did your dishes? So that I, you know, watch your energetic frequency. Would you respond well to you? Right. Would you be excited to hang out with you in the relationship? Or would you be like, oh, there's a crazy bitch coming at me?
Yeah. You know, I think, again, it is the small things. And it's so easy. I was with a couple 2 days ago. We were invited for a cup of tea. They're celebrating their 59th mm-hmm. wedding anniversary. You know, and I was sort of asking them. I'm going to bring them on the show. They're this sort of old German couple. But, you know, there's so many secrets in even watching them together, is that there's a lot of care in their communication because they're still best friends. You can tell there's a lot of love in the house. There's a lot of ritual in the house. But there's a lot of, you know, and this is what I asked him. I said, hey, I said, so what's the secret? And he looked at me. He says, well, he says, I listen to her and she listens to me.
Yeah,
which I thought was so sweet, right? Because it's so, again, it's so easy to be in the same room and not even listen. I catch myself doing that quite often because, you know, I got a lot going on in this big noggin of mine. And you know, sometimes I have to say, whoa, Dave, get present here. Get present. Yeah. Listen to what the hell's going on. You know, and it's hard when there's a lot going on. But these are wonderful. And what about one more? Because we're almost at the top of the show. What's another little takeaway tip or something that would juicy up a relationship that you've found is working in your work?
Ooh. I would say do not be afraid to schedule sex the way you would schedule a vacation. So I think if we're switching into this like sex tangent, I always like to give people little plugs because we think, you know, maybe it was hot and heavy in the beginning or something like that. And then life happens or, you know, kids happen or jobs or whatnot. And we think that things are supposed to be just organic and just, you know, all this chemistry and slam me up against the wall. And it doesn't always happen like that. And I always say, if I only worked out when I actually felt like working out, I would never work out, right? Sometimes you have to make the effort. Now what happens, you get in the workout and you very rarely go, man, I really wish I wouldn't have worked out. You go, thank God I put that DVD in. Thank God I got to the gym. So glad I did that. It's the same thing with sex, right? And we can look at it. Again, it's perspective. We can go, we can go, oh man, this is where we're at. We actually have to put this on the books. We actually, this is so unspontaneous. What if you came from the perspective of, oh my gosh, it's coming up, it's coming up. Like a vacation, you know, when you, I'm sure, because you're going on a lovely excursion soon. When you see that on your calendar, the day you're working prior to leaving, you're like, you can't focus. You're so excited. You're like, blah, 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 blah. We don't get mad about scheduling our vacations. And those are euphoric and happy and amazing and sublime. So why don't you look at like, ooh, I have a rendezvous scheduled with my lover.
A sexation. I love it. I love it. So, Amy, I got to ask this question. You know, I've really enjoyed this chat, and I feel like, again, it's going to be the first of many. You know, this is called the kick-ass life. You kind of are a kick-ass practitioner in many ways. You do kick-ass, your ebook, 15 Tips for a Kick-Ass Relationship. Mm-hmm. You have some, you know, you have three badass programs, you know, relationships, you know. And so I do... I'm going to sort of share with everyone how they can come and work with you, because I really do think it's going to be a wonderful journey with you. But share with me, what do you think? What does it mean to lead a kick-ass life? What is a kick-ass life to Amy? Mm.
Well, you know, I was kind of thinking about this today in some journaling that I was doing, and the phrase that I brought up earlier, that, you know, my dad had mentioned about getting too big for your britches and then you stop learning. I really feel like living such a kick-ass life has so much to do with constantly staying in that curiosity space and continuing to learn. So, you know, obviously I've had this large chapter in my life where I've learned so much about authenticity, and that has felt rich and kick-ass and amazing, right? But I'm open to that journey shifting and changing. And there's still times when I go, ooh, I made a mess. I need to clean that up. And who I am today is so different than who I was 10 years ago. And I would say living a kick-ass life is being committed to being a student of life, learning your lessons, accepting what is coming along your way, and asking. I mean, I'm always asking, what's my lesson here? What's my learning? Even in the most, you know, trying of times. You know, and for me, that's a come from, that's a stance. It's my perspective on life. And it is one of half full as opposed to half empty. It's the same damn glass, right? It's the same glass. So it's your choice how you look at it, you know? And so that for me, it's that. It is truly coming from a perspective of, this is a life I get to live. What a gift. Each day approaching it with curiosity, and then allowing myself, when I have it down in the dumps day, and go, okay, there's learning here too. What is going on? I think there's so many components, but I think a lot of it has to do with your come from and just how you choose to view your life.
Awesome. Well, Amy, we're at that time that witching hour has arrived, and I so appreciate the chat. And like I said to you just before the call, we chatted for a couple of minutes, and I'm looking forward to this continuing journey as our friendship emerges through our connections. And thank you for your gems, your gifts, and thank you for who you are.
Oh, likewise. I am deeply honored, and you know, when I was speaking with some of your people about coming on the show, and I just kind of said, I'm so honored. I view this as your home, that you've invited me into your home, and I truly don't take that lightly. So the gratitude is reciprocal.
Put the kettle on. Yeah, you've already got your pajamas on. We might as well put the kettle on, have a cup of tea. All right, I'll see you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
See, he told you. David told you. Again, I poke fun because that's how he wraps up every show. But How awesome is Amy? How awesome is Amy Smith? So what an amazing story. How awesome is that to have a husband that says, hey, this is what you're already doing. Just find your dream and make a career out of it. So great. I think she's so awesome. Incidentally, you can find Amy and all of her stuff at thejoyjunkie.com. That's the joy, J-O-Y, thejoyjunkie.com. And junkie is J-U-N-K-I-E. So in its entirety, it's www.thejoyjunkie.com, thejoyjunkie.com, kind of like thekickasslife.com. And speaking of kickasslife.com and things as such, we have a little request. First of all, a small celebration. We have achieved over 300,000 downloads in 153 countries in a little over, let's see, what's May? We started in May. So that's, 8 months, 9 months, something like that. So couldn't be more excited about that. And we want to get people more engaged. We got some big goals. We got some big dreams. And we have some really incredible stuff coming up for you this year in 2013. Not the least of which is this Kick-Ass Life Adventure Club, which is so cool. We're going to Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands. I don't exactly know when yet, and David will have to connect about that, but we'll have some information on the website. And by the way, if you are subscribed to this, you know, via iTunes or your iPhone, we typically have some show notes. If you go to the Kick-Ass Life when these shows launch, there's usually a little bit. There's some links on the if you just go to thekickasslife.com and click on that episode. Well, then it'll have some information about the person that was on it and their links and their websites. In this case, I'll have a link to that Zoom H4N. I'll have links to Amy E. Smith and how you can reach out to her. And a couple others that I want to talk to you about really quick before I jump off. But we have now 300,000 downloads in 153 countries, but we only have 2,200 likes on Facebook. And we would love to see our Facebook page really be a central hub for communication for everyone. And not in a private way. I can't even tell you how many awesome emails we get from people that have had their lives really changed and some that are really heavy. I mean, really absolutely humbling, to be honest. But we want our Facebook page to be this hotbed of communication and really a resource for you. So if you haven't already liked our Facebook page yet, I made a little URL today that I think will be easy. All you have to do is go to davidonfacebook.com, davidonfacebook.com, right where you would normally type a web address, and that will take you right to our Kick-Ass Life Facebook page. So davidonfacebook.com, and just give us a like if you would. And if you have any, I would love to hear some comments and suggestions. If you loved the show, if you have any suggestions for it, just write a little something on the wall. And we try to respond to every single thing, whether it's myself or David or, you know, somebody on the team is there all the time. So David really does respond to 95% of them. But when he's away like this for a couple weeks, sometimes I have to reach out and kind of say, you can always tell because my spelling and grammar are really good and David's nerd are awful. But anyway, so yeah, that's the deal. So we would love if you would give us a Facebook like, and that's what we want to focus on a little bit and see if we can get that thing to 10,000 instead of 2,000. And what else? I think that's about it. I have one more thing, I suppose. For those of you that have iPhones and don't know this, I don't know if you know how to subscribe to the show on your iPhone, but if you go to the App Store, which is that little blue link, it's one of your apps on the iPhone, and you search for it's called Podcast, and it's an Apple application, and it's how you download podcasts, and it's purple. So you'll know that's the right one. So you just search for podcasts in the App Store and download the podcast app. And then within the podcast app, search for the Kick-Ass Life with David Wood, and it'll allow you to subscribe. So every time we have a new show that comes out, it just automatically pops up on your iPhone. So if you have any questions about how to do that or what to do, just go to davidonfacebook.com and post it on the Facebook wall, and I will respond and take you through it. And if there's enough response, I'll do a little video tutorial so everyone knows how to do it. Okay? So, gosh, with that was awesome. Thanks for letting me hang out with you for a couple minutes. And remember, we have this amazing special guest on Saturday for our 10-minute, 600-second show. I just spoke to him about an hour ago, and he's really psyched to be part of this for us. So many of you will already know him, and some of you won't, but one of the most dynamic men I've ever met. So this guy is unbelievable, and he's Saturday morning on the 600-second show. So with that, all y'all get out there and have a kick-ass day. And we will see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass. Kick-ass. Kick-ass.